Hello and welcome to Witchy Wellness Radio. I'm your host, Lauren Chalantani, women's holistic health coach and fellow recovering perfectionist. This podcast was created to show you that your body is not in the way. It is actually leading your way. Hello, hello, Witchy Wellness listeners. This is your host again, Lauren, and you're listening to episode 64, Emotional Eating with Trisha Nelson. I love talking about some of these more day-to-day or 3D, you know, reality topics that we all deal with, such as emotional eating, because I found myself before, you know, either being too obsessive over, you know, only eating healthier things or obsessive over working out, rather than looking at the underlying cause. And as a listener, I'm sure you guys are all well aware that there's always a root belief, there's always a root misbelief or mistruth to what you're trying to heal. And our guest today, Trisha, is an emotional eating expert and author of a best-selling book, Heal Your Hunger, 7 Steps to End Emotional Eating Now. And we dive into so many different topics, but I know this will resonate with every single person. Trisha shares with us the underlying causes that you might actually be surprised about, because one of them is like people-pleasing, and how that relates to your emotional eating and how you can actually heal your hunger. And before we jump into today's show, since quarantine, working from home, or trying to homeschool, all of our routines have been flipped upside down. And I know that my daily checklist or my planner didn't seem to shrink. It actually seemed to grow during this time. And I found myself getting lost in a list of to-dos, since now that I'm home more often, I can do more. Doesn't necessarily work out that way. So I made a daily printable and editable, if you don't want to print, PDF checklist that actually empowers you to create your day on your terms by first setting your intention on how you want to feel. You get to break it up into as many categories as you want. I suggest 3. You can separate by home, work, and self-care. Writing how you want to feel in each of those areas. And from there, then we put the checklist into action and start crossing things off. But I know I needed to create this for myself to help me stay focused, help me stay grounded, and not sidetrack my own self-care and my own mental well-being to get more things done off the list. So if you are ready to start your best day yet on your terms, head over to the show notes and download the daily intention checklist below. And without further ado, please enjoy episode number 64, Emotional Eating with Trisha Nelson. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Witchy Wellness Radio. And again, I am your host, Lauren. And this is a show you get to learn that your body is not in your way, but actually leading your way. And I'm so excited to talk today with Trisha Nelson. We are going to be talking about how to overcome emotional eating. And Trisha lost over 50 pounds by just identifying and healing the underlying causes of her emotional eating. And she's spent the past 30 years researching and hidden causes of all the addictive personalities. Trisha is an emotional eating expert and the author of the number one best-selling book, Heal Your Hunger, 7 Simple Steps to End Emotional Eating Now. She also certifies health coaches so they can get better results, referrals, and revenue by helping their clients overcome emotional eating. Trisha is the host of the popular podcast, The Heal Your Hunger Show, and is a highly regarded speaker. Trisha's been featured on NBC, CBS, KTLA, Fox, and Discovery Health. Wow. We got a lot to cover today. Welcome to the show, Trisha.
Thanks, Lauren. So good to be here.
I'm so happy to have you here too. And I think emotional eating, we're recording this during the pandemic, of sorts. And we were talking a little bit off air of like how important, especially right now, it is to kind of identify these underlying causes. And sometimes it takes, you know, a big wake up call for us, whether it's, you know, wanting to lose 50 pounds or maybe getting stuck inside and realizing that you do emotional eat. And you know, I tell everybody that's an opportunity for you to grow. You know, don't look at where you are, if you don't like where you are, as some negative thing that you can't overcome. It's an opportunity. And I'm sure you had quite the big opportunity getting into all of this and researching all these emotional eating underlying causes. Could you tell us your beautiful story of how you got to doing the work that you do today?
Absolutely. And I totally agree. It's, you know, I have friends right now who normally just think, oh, that's wonderful work that you do, Tricia, emotional eating, blah, blah, blah. And then now they're calling, like they don't relate to it normally. And now they're calling me like, Tricia, I'm an emotional eater because they're stuck at home with food. And it's just, you know, funny how, you know, when, you know, it's all this fear, all this uncertainty, you know, it definitely lends itself to nervous eating, comfort eating, that kind of thing. But yeah, I started out, I'd say as far back as I can remember, as an emotional eater, you know, and of course I was not aware I was an emotional eater. I thought I just liked food. So food was a big highlight for me, and I did love to eat, and I loved to cook. I loved to serve food to other people, you know, go out to eat. That was always something that got me really excited. And so food was just like the number one source of entertainment and fun and love and comfort for me. And it wasn't until I had struggled for several years with my weight. You know, I started out doing diets, which of course, you start doing thinking, oh, it's easy. You know, it's just simple math. You know, you eat less, you exercise more, you get the weight off, boom, you're done. But no, not so easy. And so I was doing diets, then I was doing exercise programs and pills and potions and lotions, and then 12-step programs and eating disorders therapy. So I was really going at it, and nothing I tried was working, and I just kept gaining weight. And by age 21, I was 50 pounds overweight and so unhappy with my weight. And I was definitely a binge eater. So I would, you know, I would eat 3,000 calories in a sitting. It's just, I would get ice cream and cookies and chips, you know, gotta have some salty with the sweet. So I would just sit down and watch TV and go to town. And it was just a really, it was a cycle. And I, you know, what made it worse, frankly, was the dieting, you know, when I was restricting and trying to force my body to do what I thought it should do. You know, it just backfired even more. And I love what you said at the beginning, that your body is not in your way, but leading your way. And God, that's so beautiful, really, really sweet and so true, you know? And so when I was in struggle mode and fighting my body, you know, and trying to make it thin and force it to do what I wanted to do, you know, I just ended up gaining more weight. So, I was definitely a yo-yoer. So I'd like lose 20, gain 10, lose 10, gain 20, you know, and I had like 5 different size pants in my closet because I never knew what size I was going to be. And there's, I mean, one time where like my favorite pants I'd felt made me look thinner. Like I didn't wash them because this is before Lycra and all the pants that women get to wear now, thank God for Lycra. But, you know, but before that, where they, you know, I didn't want to wash them because I didn't want them to shrink, you know, and then I wouldn't be able to fit into them. So, you know, there's a lot of weird stuff, around food and, trying to make myself look thinner. And, but the bottom line is it wasn't just the weight, you know, I had the depression that went along with it, you know, just that darkness of just feeling hopeless, you know, hating myself for losing control, always feeling like what is wrong with me? Like I can't get this, you know, and other people lose weight and keep it off and I lose weight and put it back on. And, you know, just a lot of self-recriminating thoughts. So that's where I was. And I got to a place, Lauren, where I just sort of wondered if anything was ever going to change. You know, I had that sense of hopelessness. And I thought, you know, I can't do this for the rest of my life, the up and down, you know, yo-yo scene. And what happened by the grace of God is I met somebody who showed me how to really deal with emotional eating. So that's when I really started to change, is when I realized it's not about the food. It's not about the weight. It really is about the underlying causes. And I was shown, you know, how to really dig in and deal and heal those things. So I could no longer be compelled to eat, you know, I mean, that was the upshot of it. And so when I learned this system for healing, I was so grateful. And I started helping this person who helped me. He was a healer, and I started helping him help others. And that's literally what I've done my entire adult life, you know, in the past 30 years, is to help other people heal from emotional eating. And more recently, it's been in the form of my company, Heal Your Hunger, over the past 3 years, which I do virtually, you know, online. But it all stems, you know, from my personal experience of healing, and then of course many, many years helping others heal. And it's so funny because we're not all that different, you know. If somebody's an emotional eater, you know, that the underlying stuff is pretty standard. And that's something that I've written about in my book and talk about and in my work. And it's actually brought a lot of healing and solace to people who think they're so bad and they're so strange and they're so messed up, and to realize, no, it's pretty standard, you know, and it's easy to overcome, easier than people think to overcome.
Yeah, it's interesting to see that the underlying causes are, I call them the false beliefs or false mm-hmm. programs that kind of run the subconscious show. And absolutely. And we don't really, you know, we are really similar, even though maybe our situation or, you know, people in our life are might be different, but those beliefs, those core beliefs, you know, our subconscious absolutely. Is like, what, over 95% of our brain? Mm-hmm. And if we don't know and identify and learn how to reprogram, they're going to run the show. And that 5% of our conscious brain really can't do that much. And I'm sure that's what you help people with, is kind of reworking those beliefs, as you said. And I'm assuming they're probably like not worthy, not enough.
For sure.
That's a big one.
Yeah, the lack of a sense of worthlessness is so big, you know, and I certainly had that, you know, and so much of the time it does come from childhood experiences, mm-hmm. trauma, you know, alcoholism, whatever, if somebody's growing up with a parent who's an addict, you know, or abusive in some way. So definitely we get it as small children, and I did. And I had very loving parents, but I think their own sense of self-worth, you know, rubbed off on me for sure. And so I developed those same beliefs as well. I call them untrue beliefs, but definitely when we grow up with that, we're at a deficit, you know, and then what we do is we develop coping tools to try to overcome that. And then those coping tools, while they saved our life as children, as adults, they end up creating our overeating, you know, creating cravings. And I always say it's actually good news, you know, the fact that we have these coping tools and they create our cravings is good news, because then we can change those things and actually create a different experience around food. So in my book, I write about the anatomy of the emotional eater. And these are 24 personality traits that really make up the emotional eater's personality. And again, I've been doing this for so long that it's so standard. Like, these 24 traits are like, when I talk about this in my program as well, people are like awestruck. They're just like, oh my God, that's me, you know, and they can't believe it, like, that I've named these different things. But it's so important, because it isn't about the food, you know, and if we're just like working on our new diet or a new fad diet that comes down the pike or whatever, and we're always approaching it from the food and physical level, we'll never change. Because if these personality traits persist, you know, they're going to keep creating that sense of stress and low self-esteem and different things that do create the cravings. So I sort of, I just feel like hallelujah, that the fact that we can take different actions, because I really find that we have to act our way into right thinking. Like it's hard to, like you were saying, it's really hard to change a subconscious belief, but by action, I really believe we can. So I'd love to talk to you about the top. Like I can't obviously go through the 24 personality traits, but I'd love to talk about the top one because I feel like everybody's pretty much gonna nod their head and feel like this is definitely me. So what I found in my research is the top personality trait of an emotional eater that creates all kinds of trouble is people pleasing. So this, this is a big problem. And again, it does stem from that low self-esteem. When we didn't get that foundational sense of self-worth as a child, it just didn't happen. It's nobody's fault. It didn't happen. It was circumstantial. And so we didn't have it. And therefore we seek it from outside of us. We don't have it from the inside. We seek from the outside. Growing up, if we did have alcoholism in our family or a raging parent or whatever, it's even more so that we're tuned in to the, it's like somebody else's mood, somebody else's, being, so that we can, how can we please them? How can we keep them from yelling at us? How can we keep them from drinking? It's like we get the sense that we can control our outsides. If we can control our outsides, we can control our insides. And so, again, what was once a coping tool turns into a really an ugly mess, because as adults, when we're people pleasing and we're wanting so much to have approval from outside of us, because we don't have it from inside of us, what happens is that we knock ourselves out trying to get that approval, try to get those atta girls, those paths on the back, and we run ourselves ragged doing it. We're always volunteering for the additional project at work, or we're always the ones to throw the party because nobody else wants to do it. We're always doing our kids' homework. I mean, there's all these different things that we're doing and getting so exhausted, in the process, exhausting our adrenals, being tired, but even worse, it creates a sense of resentment because nobody's ever as pleased as we imagine they're going to be, right? We're going to do this heroic effort and nobody's going to even notice. So I always say it's the perfect, it's a setup for a binge. It's the perfect setup for a binge. You're resentful, exhausted, worn out, and unappreciated, and you go home and you have the I deserve it binge. And so, nobody else is going to recognize me. I'll reward myself. And so it's a vicious cycle. But, again, we did that. Like we created that. So we can uncreate that. We can stop people pleasing, stop raising our hand for every additional piece of work that there is, like realize that sense of, atta girls, if that even comes to us, it's short-lived. You can't pay your bills with what people think of you, and so it's better, we're better off creating boundaries in our time and being clear about what we can and can't do without getting exhausted, without, really just sort of creating more stress in our lives. And when we make those new choices, that's how we come to realize, first of all, we realize we don't need all that approval from other people. Not only is it, does it not always come the way you want it to, but it is short-lived and, so much better to approve of ourselves, and to feel like we're, we have a sense of who we are and where we stop and other people begin. And so that really does change things. And most of all, it changes our eating because we're not, stretched too thin anymore, and we're not resentful because people aren't doing it our way when we had all these unreasonable expectations of people's appreciation and approval.
Yeah. I mean, just that alone is a huge part of emotional eating. And I work a lot with myself, but also clients with perfectionism. And that's direct, like people pleasing number one thing. Again, it's like, I'm trying to find my worth externally and I have to take on everything because I can do it all. And then whether the crash is emotional breakdown, binge eating, whatever, it's like this, it's an abusive cycle towards ourselves, right?
Completely.
And yeah. It takes that realization that one, it is something, it's a choice that we created it. And I find it empowering. Yeah, you might do it a little bit and it takes a while to get those boundaries right. Sometimes they're not always perfect, but the realization that you can observe what happened, it's so powerful to be able to say, oh, I created this. I'm not a victim of my life. And take, like you said, that action is how you get results and change your actions. And so many of us, especially as women, I think we try to do it all because, you know, we can have a career, we can have a family too if we want, and we go, 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 go. Of course, I'll take on the PTA party, potluck, and the more projects at work. And then we find ourselves in this like emotional puddle, and it's like, how did I get here? I'm not good enough or whatever. Yeah. It's because we overload ourselves. Yes, we are super women, but we have to do one thing at a time. I would love to be able to do everything all at once. It's not possible. I'm one person.
Yep. No, I really, you know, accepting our limitations is really important. You know, if I don't mind, you know, eating crap and overeating and being exhausted, you know, skipping meals all day and then binging at night, and, you know, whatever the cycle is, if I don't mind, you know, hating like what I've done to my body or how I've let myself go or whatever, if I don't mind that, I can act like Superwoman all day long, you know. But if I want different results with my eating and my weight and just my sanity, I have to make choices. And I think that's such an important thing, is to realize my limitations and to say no. Learn the word no, you know, no, I can't, you know, I've got too much. I always tell clients, like, just say you've got too much on your plate, you know, and it won't be a lie.
Yeah. I think the most powerful sentence is just to say, no, thank you.
Yeah.
That's it. You don't need to explain. I find myself when I say no, sometimes I try to, oh, because of X, Y, Z, da, 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 da. And it's a lot more powerful, and you can feel that energetically and emotionally, that boundary of just saying no thank you versus these excuses. Because, and I find myself in those situations, I always say, am I shoulding all over myself? Mm-hmm. I should be doing this, I should be doing that. And even if you say no, sometimes you can still internally be guilting or shaming yourself for that. Let's go deeper on some of these boundary things. How would you help somebody with that? Because just because you say no, I find a lot of people still have that guilt and shame wrapped around all of that.
Totally. You know, I always, I mean, I've had a hard time saying no. It's something I've learned, you know, over the years. But I recommend that people, like, if you're invited to something, you know, and it's, you can't do it, but you're not like getting no to come out of your mouth is really hard, or whatever it is, you're asked to do something, do a project or whatever. I tell people to give yourself a little time in between by saying, by basically saying, sorry, I just got distracted because my printer just started. What I tell people is, say, can I get back to you on that? Okay. So, and you just give yourself that little space in between. So just say, hey, thanks so much for the invitation, or I'd love to, but I'm not sure I can. Can I get back to you? And when you do that, when you put that little bit of space in between, you don't have to come up with a no right there, which is hard, you know, often to do. Give yourself some space, and then you can, like, because I would do it in a perfunctory way. I just say yes. Like, I just automatically just pop out of my mouth, yes, because there's that tension in the moment when they're asking, you're like, ah. Give yourself a chance to think about it, you know, and check your schedule, because sometimes I wouldn't know, you know, sometimes I'm not sure, like, oh, it's kind of sounds like fun, and I kind of have too much to do right now. What's right for me? So give yourself that space to check in with yourself and figure out what is right for you. And then you can get back to the person. So I think that's really helpful. And even if you know it's a no, if you say, can I get back to you? Then you can kind of process, you know, what it takes to actually go back and say no, and say it in a way that you don't have to explain yourself, for sure. So I find that to be really helpful. Also, you know, since we're talking about food and emotional eating, people oftentimes I find feel obligated to eat other people's food that they've made, or when they're at somebody's house, or Aunt Bessie made a pie and we don't want to eat the pie, you know. It's really helpful to just remember, first of all, that we can do whatever's right for us, you know, like somebody else, just because somebody else wants us to eat something that doesn't work for us, doesn't feel good to us or whatever, doesn't mean we have to, you know, and nobody lives inside our bodies. So we're the only ones who knows how it feels to eat something or then have it be triggering and then overeat later or whatever. So I'm just realizing we don't owe anybody eating for them. You know, we don't owe anybody eating even at a time that doesn't work for us. You know, again, all these boundary stuff, like it does get tough, and it can also be our downfall when we're people pleasing people by eating their food or eating at a time that doesn't, you know, agreeing to a dinner party that where we're not going to eat dinner till 8:30 or 9, like that doesn't work for me, you know? so I have to make other arrangements or whatever, or, you know, I have to say, you know, friends want to get together, you know, when we're getting together at restaurants, if friends want to get together at restaurants, you know, I check the restaurants, and if it's a place that doesn't have anything that's going to meet my needs, I say so. Like, I'm like, can we go here instead? You know, so there are so many little places where we do have to speak up for ourselves and stand for ourselves and our needs. And it's just so, so important, you know. So, but regarding Aunt Bessie, back to Aunt Bessie, I find that saying, gee, that doesn't agree with me. Like, I don't have to go into why I don't eat such and such as, oh, no, I don't eat sugar or whatever. And that whole thing that sets me up, you know, to like never eat sugar. And if anybody ever sees me eating sugar, I was like, oh, I said I wasn't eating sugar, you know, whatever. But just say, hey, you know, it doesn't really agree with me. Or no, thank you. You know, like you were saying, no, thank you, it doesn't agree with me. That's all I say. And it just sort of stops the conversation. You know, and not saying, no, I'm on this special eating plan. And then they all want to know about the eating plan. And then everybody wants to talk about their eating plan and, you know, and talk about why they're not on an eating plan. You know, it goes downhill really fast. So, yeah, just keeping it short and sweet, but always standing for ourselves. Like, that's what's so important, is that, you know, if we don't stand for ourselves, nobody else will or can. You know, it really is up to us. And that's, I do feel like, is the hardest journey for emotional eaters, and probably for women in general, is just learning, first of all, tuning in to what we need, and then really standing for ourselves. You know, it's such a beautiful process of learning how to do that. And nobody cares. You know, Aunt Bessie gets over it fast. You know, she might be disappointed if you don't eat her pie, but does she really care? No. you know, you can tell her how beautiful and wonderful it looks and make her feel good, but it's just, you know, nobody really cares. And we do have to live in our own skin and live with our thoughts, you know, and have this relationship with ourselves. And so there's nothing more important.
I agree. And I just thought about when we do go to restaurants that, you know, my best friend, her husband, he graduated from his allergy, but he used to be allergic to peanuts. So just as if somebody was allergic to something like peanuts, we had to check. And if that restaurant cooked with peanut oil, we couldn't go there. And it was no big deal. Everybody, right. You understood. People did, you know, there's a plethora of restaurants. I don't care where you live. And I think it's the same thing with this. And for me, I'm the same way. My friends are kind of trained this way to know, like, all right, if there's not some healthy options or, you know, whatever, like, Lauren won't be able to go. So let's find a solution for everybody that it works for them. And, you know, I used to say that, you know, I was strictly vegan or sugar-free, or, you know, you say your diet or your meal plan, and people, you know, get up in arms about it. You're right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Everybody has their opinion too, or, you know, why they're on something or why this diet works for them or why they're not. And I mean, even thinking like, I don't look very Italian, but my family is Italian, and my grandma growing up would make these big family dinners and lasagna, and she would cut like a piece of lasagna, like as big as your plate, and two breadsticks and da, da, da. And I wouldn't be able to eat all of it. And she, the, you know, the culturally it's like,
yeah,
it's, you create this overeating mentality. And I was like, no, I'm fine. Like, I'm not hungry. And it just doesn't click for some people that I can't eat a whole pan of lasagna. Yeah. I'm sorry. Yeah. But
exactly.
And if you just said, you know, you're the only one who knows, like you said, what you feel like in your body. And that's so important. That's why I started the show, is that that tagline, you know, whether it's intuitively or, you know, what we put into our bodies through thoughts, our food, the relationships we have, our body's always telling us what works or what doesn't work for us. And it's so important to listen into that. And that's beautiful work that you do related around emotional eating, is it allows us to kind of tune in to other underlying issues, but it teaches us how to really strengthen and work that intuition muscle. And that applies to everywhere in life. And that's so awesome and empowering.
Absolutely. Yep.
So I would love to hear if somebody, obviously, if they want to read your book, but how can somebody, if they're listening to this and being like, yes, I need help, I would love to go into those issues and take the right actions, how can somebody work with you today if they're interested?
They can definitely go to my website, which is healyourhunger.com, H-E-A-L, healyourhunger.com. And I actually have a free quiz on there that I'd love to offer people, because, you know, if somebody doesn't know if they're an emotional eater, you know, or even a food addict, I was a food addict, and it's really a spectrum. You know, I feel like, you know, people are in different places in that spectrum. You can actually take that quiz and find out where you are on the spectrum and then what action steps you can take. So definitely, you know, go to healyourhunger.com for that. And I also have a Facebook group, which is The Secret Sauce to End Emotional Eating. So if somebody just types in The Secret Sauce, they'll usually be able to find that. So I'm on Instagram as healyourhunger and Trisha Nelson. So any way possible, I'm happy to help, happy to, you know, speak with somebody, do a breakthrough session with them to find out kind of what's going on with them and how I might be able to help.
Amazing. So you offer one-on-one coaching, or is there any online like group programs? Or
yeah. So I actually mostly do a group program. It's sort of a hybrid. I have a 90-day group program to help people overcome emotional eating. And what I did when I started my business and wrote my book is I really put everything that I had learned to overcome emotional eating, you know, I put it in a really simplified step-by-step system. So that's the system that I teach people. And I just love it because it's not hit or miss, you know, like it's not a nebulous concept of, you know, mindful eating, intuitive eating. Those things are beautiful, but they're not a step-by-step plan. And so what I offer people is that step-by-step plan in a 90-day program. So it's group, group coaching calls with that, and some private coaching as well. So not to mention my actual program that they go through online.
Beautiful. Yeah, I think there's definitely power in group coaching.
Completely. Oh, that's the biggest part of it. You know, I actually, it's part, to me, it's an essential part of overcoming emotional eating. Like, you can't do it without the group, you know, and everybody wants to, because they don't want to out themselves and the fact that they can't stop eating or whatever. But I mean, the crazy thing is, I mean, it's so funny to me, because if somebody wants to get fit or they want to train for, you know, a pro athlete or something, they hire a trainer, you know, they hire a trainer or a few trainers. You know, tennis pros have three coaches. But when we want to overcome emotional eating, we're so ashamed, you know, we want to do it all ourselves, you know, read the book and just do it, take care of it ourselves, so nobody ever knows. But there is so much power in the community. And especially because it is such a shameful, like, people beat on themselves so much for their eating behaviors. And they always think they're the only ones who've done the crazy things they've done. I mean, I've eaten out of the trash, like I've binged and then like couldn't eat anymore, threw the food out, and 2 hours later, like went and got it back from the trash. You can imagine how ashamed I felt about that behavior. But turns out I did a YouTube video one time on it, and I got like 60,000 hits or something, because it's like other people are like, oh my God, I've done that too. You know? So, it's just, we need to come out of the closet. We need to get support. We need to take off that whole stigma of shame around our eating. And I mean, my clients, we just end up laughing about some of the crazy things we've done with food or to get rid of the food, you know? And so that is so healing, you know, doing it in community with other people is so healing, and it really does, you know, take people much further along on their journey of overcoming emotional eating.
And like you said, that the core beliefs, those personality types, it's surprising where you're like, oh, that's me. That's me. That's me.
Yes.
And the reason why I start off this show, every single show, with our beautiful guests like yourself, telling their stories, because you learn through stories and you can relate to your story. And just like in group coaching, it's going to lessen that stigma or just replace it altogether and allow you to show up more or share more once you see other people being vulnerable. And like you said, it becomes funny because it's not so serious anymore. You totally change the energy to it.
Yeah.
And like working with my health coaching clients, you know, people don't realize like, oh, I get home from a long day of work. Then all of a sudden, like I crave some sugar. I don't even keep sugar in the house. And then they find like baking chocolate chips that, you know, they want to eat. And they're like, well, why did I want to eat these? And I said, well, if you want to eat them, go ahead, eat them. But when you eat them, feel as if you are the best chocolate chip eater in the entire world, and just like make it like so dramatic. And, you know, you end up not eating that much, and you make fun of yourself in a positive light, but it's not such a big deal. And that's just a small example, and not someone who's actually a binge or a overall emotional eater, but changing the energy and the emotion around it, so it's not so serious. Because when we, like you said, we keep those things to ourselves, we don't want anybody to know. That takes a hold and that controls us.
Totally.
And I'm not saying share your story with the entire world, but when you can lighten that mood, you realize that that big scary monster fear is really like this cute little fluffy bunny, and that you can start to work with it.
Totally.
And any issue in life is like that. When we learn to face our fears, we realize it's usually not as bad as we thought it was.
Absolutely.
So with the emotional eating, is there anything else that you find? I mean, the core beliefs of people usually are the same. Are there any type of other traits or personality things that, you know, someone might be thinking here, you know, they can come take the quiz on your site, but they're thinking, maybe I am an emotional eater, maybe I'm not. Someone's kind of on the edge of that realization. How can you kind of guide them to maybe convince them to come take that quiz, or, you know, reassure them?
Well, I'd love to talk about the PEP test. Okay. So if somebody really feels like, oh, I just eat because I like food. Like that was me at one time. And I think that's where someone starts, like, oh, I definitely like food, but emotional eater, I don't see that. You know, I want to give somebody this tool, which is what I call a PEP test. And this is a way to figure out sort of what those emotional connections might be to your eating, or why, you know, if you go to the refrigerator like 5 times in an afternoon and see what's in there, you know, what's going on. So PEP is an acronym I created, and I basically identified 3 of the primary reasons why people basically what food does for us. Like we know what it does to us, makes us fat, makes us feel gross, you know, if we overeat on it or make the wrong choices or whatever. But what I always say is, you know, we have to look at what food's doing for us. And so the PEP test is what identifies that. So the first P stands for painkiller. Food is an amazing painkiller. You know, if we're out of control with, you know, munching out or snacking or, you know, whatever, that big bag of chips, you know, is gone all of a sudden. You know, food is something we use to kill emotional pain. Okay. And again, I think just hearing this is going to raise somebody's awareness and they can check in with themselves. So emotional pain, you know, that's an umbrella word for all kinds of emotions. But, you know, if we have a relationship that's not really working or it's rocky, you know, that can create emotional pain. If we're in a job that's not the right fit for us anymore, but we're afraid to leave or apply for something else, that can create emotional pain. You know, if we have a parent, you know, who's sick or dying or whatever, of course, that's emotional pain. Grief is emotional pain. All kinds of things, you know, just loneliness is emotional pain. So these are things that can drive us to eat. We're trying to kill pain. And that's why we eat heavier foods, you know, sugar and carbs and fatty foods. You know, we're not really munching out on lettuce. Okay. And the reason is because lettuce isn't going to put a blanket over those emotions. It's not going to kill the pain. You know, the heavier the food, the more numbed out we're going to be. The E in the PEP test stands for escape. Okay. And, especially now during a pandemic, you know, our reality is scary. Like our reality is truly scary. It's not in our mind. Like you can literally die going outside, you know, and interfacing with people. So that is a crazy, scary reality. And people more than ever right now want to escape their reality. And so what better way than get your favorite foods, you know, and again, the heavier, carby, snacky foods that we like, get in front of the TV or your favorite bingeable show, and you just check out. And so that's a big driver. So fear, anxiety, worry, those are big drivers of emotional eating. And the last P in the PEP test stands for punishment. And people don't think of this because we think of food as a reward. But if somebody gets out of control often, like I did, okay, so they're just, you know, casually snacking, but before you know it, the whole bag or box or carton, you know, of ice cream is gone. Guess what? You know, we feel gross. We don't feel good about ourselves. We have all these self-recriminating thoughts. And the next day, you know, we just want to pull the covers over our heads and not deal. That's punishment. Like we did that to ourselves, that awful feeling we end up having. Like we did that to ourselves. That's not exactly a reward. So why would we do such a thing? And, you know, in my experience, it is subconscious guilt, you know, underlying guilt. And emotional eaters, you know, I always say overeaters are overfeelers. Like we're very sensitive and we feel deeply. And so, you know, if like somebody was mad at us, again, the people pleasing thing, you know, we can feel really guilty. Or if we did something like we, you know, said something that wasn't very nice, you know, and we don't take care of it, we carry that guilt and we beat ourselves up. And food and overeating is a good way to abuse ourselves. And so that can often be a driver as well. So pain, fear, and guilt are the three really overarching emotions that I find do really drive emotional eating. So somebody, you know, started out listening to this show and they're like, I'm not an emotional eater. That's just a, you know, that's for the birds. You know, next time, again, you're kind of going to town on something, you know, and it's starting to make you feel sick, like you've eaten more than you intended to, you know, you might want to just do a little check-in, like with a PEP test, like what's driving me? Like, why did I go to the kitchen like and make something when I wasn't even hungry? What was that about? You know, was there some fear? Was there some pain? Or, you know, am I feeling bad about something? You know, and just making those small connections with your emotions and your eating can really start to, you know, help you wake up to the fact that your eating might be emotionally charged at times.
Beautiful. I think the PEP test is something easy and accessible for most people. And I'm thinking, you know, I'm thinking in my head as you're talking about years past and even now, like you're right with everything that's going on outside, I've had my own moments of, you know, emotional eating and that's okay just to be aware of it and learn, you know, that's an opportunity for you to check in and ask, absolutely, how am I really doing? What's that underlying emotion, that anxiety, that fear? And it's okay. You know, like we said, there's a lot going on, especially right now. And, you know, listening to something like the show, you guys are listening for a reason. You're here to learn, to grow, to feel better. And if this is resonating with you or even somebody that you love, share it. And not only that, but follow through. Go take that quiz on Trisha's site because there's so much you can do by just listening to this, but when you apply it and dive deeper, you know, the outcome is going to be some better and bigger than you can have ever imagined. And
amen.
Yeah. And you just kind of take that first step. And I know it's scary, especially when something that you may be dealing with for a very long time. But when you can take that first step, maybe it's going on her site to take the quiz. Just keep asking yourself, can I take one more step? Can I take one more step? And thank you so much, Trisha, for coming on. This was a beautiful show. I needed to hear some of these things again.
Me too. Yeah.
I know this show, I'm always like, ooh, I'm so glad I like, did I just say that? Ooh, what they just said was, I needed to hear that right now. Thank you again. But with wrapping up the show, was there anything else you wanted to cover before we end the show today?
No, I think we did it. You know? Yeah.
It was beautiful. Beautiful Thank package you. With a ribbon on top. And we end every show, you know, thanking you for your presence and your wisdom, and also just showing up for yourself. You wouldn't be here today if you didn't face your fears and you didn't really look at those underlying issues and create this beautiful lifelong passion of work to help other people and empowering us all. And we would love to return that act of service or that gratitude for you today. So how may we be of service for you today?
Oh my goodness. That's such a sweet question. You know, I would just say, put yourself first. That would make me really happy. Put yourself first, you know, put your oxygen mask on first, because everybody gets they get the best part of you when you do put yourself first. It's actually a selfless act, not a selfish act.
Amen. Amen. We all need that reminder too. Yeah, for sure. Thank you again so much for coming on the show today. It was such a pleasure, and I'm sure all of us really needed to hear this. So thank you again.
Thank you so much, Lauren. Thanks for your amazing work that you're doing in the world to help people heal.
And remember, open up, surrender, trust, and let your body lead the way.